And a guy who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal. A sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gijp.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again. And Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though. Still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously, being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And it goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today, myself, Jay and Buster will take a look over the events so far during the close season. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers. How are you doing?
Well, I think we've had a full week properly without any football at all since the last ball was kicked in the Scotland-England game. Is the withdrawal symptoms kind of sinking in now and setting in a wee bit?
I was just laughing there because I'd forgotten about the last kick of the ball essentially in that Scotland-England game. Mm-hmm. No, I think the Scotland-England game kind of took the edge off a wee bit. Obviously, we're on the same boat. I think the Monday after the last game of the season, everybody was discussing when the dates and the fixtures are out and when's the fixtures for this and the cup and the league and all that kind of thing. So the Scotland-England game took the edge off a wee bit. But I'm starting to get a wee bit of the withdrawal symptoms now and counting down the days to, I think, is the first friendly Stirling away. Have I made that up, Nate?
No, the first of July.
First of July.
Is it Stirling?
Right, well, I am already kind of counting down the days to even just the friendly matches to kind of see the new players and things like that.
I'm the same as I was, to be fair. The international football is always good, but it's no really real football for me. It's good to get behind your country. Even the Confederations Cup that started yesterday, you know, it's good to even watch it, but I've no real interest in it, so I've been itching to go for about 3 days for the season finished.
Well, there's certainly been plenty of activity. I suppose there's 5 new faces already confirmed, with a 6th in kind of strange circumstances. Stephen Robinson confirming that we'd signed a left back, but wouldn't actually announce the particulars of that deal until he'd proven his fitness. But good to see, certainly, Jay, that we're bringing guys in and we're active this early, given the fixtures haven't even been confirmed for next season.
Aye, that's it. I mean, I think everybody, the minute the season ends, everybody's in the same boat. When Steelman online and social media, who are we going to sign? What areas do we need, particularly in a season like this, when I think a rebuilding job is always going to go in the cards? Obviously, you get folk kind of expecting big signings straight away in the positions that are the priority. You know, you read stuff in Steelman online about people saying that, oh, I wish we'd signed defenders by now. You know, defence should be the priority. We only seem to be signing midfielders, forgetting obviously that we very well we probably are seeking out defenders. In fact, we know we are, because we've apparently got some left-sided defender that might be coming in. So I'm actually really enjoying the transfer news. I think that's another thing that I think's taking the edge off the close season a wee bit. The fact that you're going into every week genuinely expecting maybe one or two signings, and I think a lot of the signings we've brought in have been good. But yeah, we still need to strengthen the defence. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the left-sided defender. It sounds as though it's a fitness thing and maybe he needs to prove himself during pre-season. So once that's out the way, maybe he joins, maybe he doesn't. We certainly do need to strengthen the defence. But in terms of signings and things like that, I think it's all looking shape up pretty good, and I think we can all be a wee bit positive about that.
Buster, the guys that have come in as well seem to come in with a bit of pedigree, particularly Gael Bigarama, who comes from Coventry City.
I'm glad you know how to pronounce his name.
I've kind of sought lessons over the last couple of weeks. That's certainly a a guy that comes with a decent pedigree and seems like a bit of a coup for the club that we've managed to get a guy in with that level of reputation and that pedigree.
It certainly does. You know, we've got a couple of mates, Joe, who's been on the podcast before, and Marty, who go and see Coventry quite regularly for people who live in Scotland. So it's good to see, you know, that they rate him highly. As far as I'm aware, he won Player of the Year for Coventry last year. So it'll be good to see if he can actually, you know, put in a couple of performances for us, get himself, you know, put himself in the market and maybe make us a bit of money, because that's obviously our plan going forward. But it was good to see us getting the, you know, getting the business done early in the transfer market. I think it's been 10 days we've signed one guy in the last 10 days or something, and it feels a bit of a letdown because we were so active so early. But as you say, there's a lot of new guys coming in. Even the left back that we don't know nothing about, we'll probably find out who that will be in tomorrow, I think, Monday, when they all go back to training. Is that right?
I think it's the 21st. Aye, back,
so it's not something you're going to be able to keep quiet as soon as the photos are out and things like that. People will be able to identify him. I think there's name. I can't remember the name, but there was a name doing the rounds in Steelman Online.
It was, well,
I think Robinson had signed it.
A guy called Dunn, Charlie Dunn.
That seems to possibly be him. And by all accounts, is it him that's got mental hair? So he should be identified.
Oh, I read that. I
so
know,
it might be identifiable for the photos. So it's the same with the, you know, anything like that. As soon as somebody turns up for training, they're going to be spotted, and you're going to know they're there.
No, that's exactly what I thought. As soon as I read that sort of strange comment, we've got somebody and we'll have a look at them before we've potentially agreed terms. But you know, we just want to improve his fit. So I thought, as soon as the training starts, if he's going to do a pre-season, we'll find out who it is. Somebody will be able to identify him. But it's been interesting. There's been a few things announced, you know, not to do with the players as well, so, or not to do with the player side as well. So it's been an interesting early pre-season, but you know, still a couple of weeks before we get our first competitive games underway. So it'll be good to see what happens in between then and now as well.
Slight concern of mine, the fact that we are bringing in so many players from down south. That's a route that we've taken quite a lot of times before, and we do seem quite strict with this signing model, that we will get guys from down south and hopefully move them on at a later date for profit. I would quite like to see a few Scottish guys coming in just to perhaps bolster the experience of Scottish football. I don't know whether it's we're looking exclusively at England, I wouldn't imagine so, but we've said before we'd quite like to see some of the lower leagues in Scotland looked at, because it has brought success for other clubs.
I think that, you know, I don't think we're exclusively looking at England, but I think there's maybe, because of, you know, the size of England as well, there's maybe a lot more scope for picking up a couple of free agents here and there, whereas in Scotland, if they're a young player, there's going to be a fee involved. I know we're paying minimal fees for some players anyway, but I think that, you know, when it goes to the tribunal or whatever, I think the fees are going to be a bit bigger than, you know, the 20 grand or whatever it is we're probably paying for players now. We've also, as far as I'm aware, we signed a guy for Queen's Park, Brown, I think his name was.
Oh, aye, aye. I saw something.
But obviously he's straight in, well, he's going into the under 20 squad as far as we're aware as well. But, you know, we also signed that boy, well, we're also looking at signing that boy Phillips, I think, for that documentary thing.
Aye.
But again, I think he's going to the under 20s as well, from what I was reading.
It was Sam Phillips of Wolves, wasn't it?
Yeah, because he went in that exit trial thing. The documentary thing was actually really good. And he looked really well. He looked as if he was doing really well at that in the games. Again, it's a 2-minute highlight you saw of him. But I don't think we're particularly looking at England specifically, but I think it's just that there's a bigger, you know, there's a bigger margin for picking up free players. But rather than where they're from, my concern right now is the fact that we are having to do such a big rebuilding job, and there's going to be so many new faces in it as well, and it takes some time to gel, you know, basically. So
aye,
the first couple of weeks of the season, you don't really get many friendlies, because we've got 4 or 5 keyed in, but you don't really get many because of the League Cup starting now, so it really has to come together pretty quickly.
I think it's, unless you're talking about players from a completely different country with a completely different style of football, I think it's overrated, the kind of chat about, oh, we need somebody who knows how to play Scottish football. If you're playing in the lower leagues, England, by and large, you would imagine it's not vastly different. I was reading an interview with Jamie Murphy recently, and he was actually saying that Scottish football is, they actually found Scottish football a better standard and more technical than sort of League One in England, but League One in England is far more about fitness and things like that. So there obviously are differences, but I don't think the differences are mad. I don't think you're going to sign a big centre half from a League One side who's going to come into Scotland and struggle because he's never played in Scottish football before. I don't think it's a man. I can understand the kind of the ideological side of it, or the romantic side of it. You want a good core of you know, young Lanarkshire lads and all that kind of thing, and Scottish players, and I do understand that it can help, but I think by and large the business we've done so far has been good. Of course, you can only work with the contacts you've got, the scouting network you've got, things like that. If he's got a choice between a player from who's been released from, say, Coventry, or someone from the lower leagues in Scotland, and he genuinely thinks that the guy for Coventry is going to be better, they has to go with him. I would be surprised if we don't sign a couple of Scottish players, but I don't think it's the be all and end all, particularly because, you know, the first signing we made under, I think, was at Barraclough in his first summer, and the first signing we made was Joe Chalmers, and technically that would have ticked every box. I know he'd been released, was he on loan at Falkirk before he came to us? Was he released from Celtic? And
yeah,
we signed
I think
him?
That's correct, yeah.
So, I mean, would that player tick those boxes? It certainly would for me, because I've said in the past about, you know, guys like, completely forgotten his name now, the Falkirk player.
Luke Lee.
Who was it?
The boy who was left back, Luke
Lee. No, the one who is now at St Johnson. Blair Alston, and who was the other boy? Craig. I completely forgot another one as well. There was the two of them at Falkirk like, a couple of years ago, were young players, looked ideal for the kind of players that we should be looking at.
Sybil
as well. And, you know, those kind of players probably aren't vastly different in terms of experience. Well, they are now because those guys played for endlessly, like season after season for Falkirk. But like Joe Chalmers, for example, was playing at Falkirk, was a young Scottish player, and was probably the kind of player that you would have looked at pedigree wise and go, we'll take him. And he's a bomb scare by and large, he's been terrible for us. So I don't think the whole Scottish thing's a be all and end all. I'm quite encouraged with the signings we've made. First, I mentioned earlier, the likes of Joe and Martin going on about Gail, and you can insert in his surname on the editor here. So.
I would say it's bigger than Manna, unless you're trying
to for Big G over the course of the season.
But I mean, Joe in particular, his reaction is somebody who has a real big interest in Coventry and goes to some of their games. His reaction to that in terms of a coup is probably as big a reaction I've seen from any Motherwell fan for a good number of years now. We don't sign players that result, okay, most Motherwell fans have maybe heard of them, probably don't know a great deal about them. I saw loads of stuff in Steelman Online about, you know, raising concerns that we're signing players for a relegated Coventry side, which, you know, by that logic, if we'd went down, Lou Moat must have been garbage because, yeah, you know, we'd been a relegated side. But I'm not, you know, very rarely do you see a Motherwell fan who knows about a player we've signed have quite a big reaction to it as much as Joe did, because we don't sign players you would consider coups, no, whereas this seems to be one. I'm really looking forward to seeing
it. When it was mentioned on Steelman Online as well, and it kind of popped up in conversation, he was quite quick to dismiss it as well. Like, that'd be an incredible sign, and there's no chance we'll get him type thing.
On the day, I think it was on the day, there was rumours about it, and I think on the day that he'd even said that, it was no chance.
The rumour came out that morning, and Mother will then say, no, we've announced a player. And I jokingly just kept harassing him, shouting, announce. I was just saying Biggie, but that's who I meant. They announced the Inverness striker, sorry.
Alex Fisher.
I forgot his name there. And then, you know, I let it slide, thinking, oh, that was amusing myself on my day after. And then an hour later, they announced him, and I thought,
that's because they were adamant that we weren't going to sign him because it was just too far out of reach. And I think I saw something in Steelman Online as well, where someone had kind of, not criticised, but had said they felt let down with the signings because, you know, Burrows had made, you know, it said he was quite excited about one or two of them. And this particular person was saying, well, I've not seen the signings that should make you excited. So, but that says more about their lack of knowledge about who they're signing. And my lack of knowledge as well, I know absolutely call about English football, so I know nothing.
Let's face it, we've struggled with names off.
And I wouldn't have been particularly excited about any of these signings based on my own knowledge, because the only one I really know about is Alex Fisher, because he's scored a couple of goals against us. But from what you hear, for people down south of a wee bit more in depth knowledge about it, I mean, a couple of the signings, particularly Gail, you know, it's a signing that we should actually genuinely be really excited about.
The three players that were offered contracts, Lionel Ainsworth, Russell Griffiths and Keith Lasley. Ainsworth's obviously left. Still slightly in the dark over the future of the other two. Keith Lasley seemed to activate some bizarre clause in his contract that will ensure that he stays at Fir Park, but in what capacity we're not 100% sure as yet. Russell Griffiths, the signing has been noted as being very close for a couple of weeks now and hasn't quite got over the line. But these are two players you'd have to expect will be at Fir Park next season.
Aye. I think the Lasley one's the most interesting one because it did seem to spring or take everybody by surprise, this 1 year extension, and particularly Stephen Robinson, from his comments, didn't really seem to be expecting it, which is interesting. In saying that, I mean, is it? I think the intention, obviously, we'd offered them a new deal. I don't think that new deal would have involved necessarily the playing side of it, or if it would, it may have been in a James McFadden type role where you're on the coaching staff but you're there if needed. That may still be the case. I don't see why the 1 year contract extension would necessarily mean that wouldn't be the case any longer. The Russell Griffiths one, it could just be he's on holiday. I mean, it could be as simple as that. I don't know the ins and outs of it. It might just be we've signed our number one goalkeeper for next year. We want to keep Griffiths on potentially as backup, but there's no rush to do it. He's maybe on holiday, and maybe it's just we'll stick a pin in it until you get back. It could be as simple as that. Because we've already signed Trevor Carlson, of course. Because we've already signed him, maybe the urgency just isn't there, and we're quite happy for Griffiths to go away to Benidorm for a week or two and mull it over. You know, I don't think there's any concern there, just because it hasn't, you know, been finalised.
I think that's basically the case with Lasley as well. Now, Lasley's extension was obviously something that no one really knew about.
I wonder if he did.
Kept it quiet. There's all sorts of rumours about it being a stupid reason, but it was probably clearly based on appearances.
Oh, it had to be.
So he's met that threshold. He's got his extension. Fair enough. Maybe it's just because I love Keith Lasley, but you know, I think he was by far away or most consistent midfielder last year. Mm-hmm. Whether that's due to poor recruitment or just the fact that the other players weren't as good as expected and they were gassed during the season, fair enough. But I think again he's been on holiday, he'll come back, and as you said as well, Jay, they're probably going to sit down and say, look, you've got your contract, let's negotiate it a bit We'll see what other role we can step into.
Exactly,
because he's got a qualified coach. I don't know how the qualifications work, but he's done all his qualifications. He was proud of the fact he'd done that. You could tell when he'd done it. It's his wee avatar on Twitter and things like that, you know, and he's got the qualifications, and you've got to start somewhere. So, as long as you know Steve Robinson and whoever else is involved in that decision, as long as they're all happy with him coming in as assistant manager, as long as that's fine, I don't see any problems.
I know that it was mentioned on Steelman Online. Like, I don't want to keep referencing Steelman Online, but it's probably because it's during the close season. You end up going on more than you normally do because you're just trying to get your fit.
I'm a couple of times a day, whereas normally I'm looking for going a couple of times a month.
Trying to fill the void of Neil Motherwell chat and stuff. But
it's a hell of a lot better actually than it has been in recent times.
Let's just talk about that for 3 seconds because it gets a bad rep. It's only because everybody greets and moans about things, but everybody does that everywhere.
Everybody goes away and greets and moans about Steelman Online, so it's just this endless circle of greeting and moaning. But
get on Steelman Online, everybody.
The thing about, I think Lasley's earmarked for assistant. I'd be surprised if he isn't. And I was just saying, I saw the odd post in Steelman Online about his lot. You know, this is why we started talking about it. This isn't a second one, this is the first one. But because a few folk had mentioned the fact that, oh, well, as long as he's qualified, you know, it shouldn't be another job for the boys. I don't know, I don't have Keith on LinkedIn or anything like that, but I'm pretty sure that he's probably as qualified an assistant manager as we're likely to get. I mean, he's very well qualified, I think he's very well thought of. In terms of his coaching and stuff like that, and I think if you can basically tick the boxes of the qualifications with somebody who loves the club, knows the club, I think that'd be a good appointment. Now that we know Faddy's left as well, it opens the door. I tend to agree with Buster. I think if there's nothing wrong with having somebody like that listed as a player anyway, if you're going to be bringing them in as an assistant and giving them a wage, stick them down as a player as well.
And then if you get a limit in your squad numbers,
if you have a crisis and you genuinely end up in a situation where you know you've got injuries and suspensions all through your midfield, then you've got somebody there that can come in. As long as he's aware that that's the situation and he's not going to be playing week in, week out. Saying that, if he's in the squad, he might go in there and be consistent and play well and earn the right to be there. There's no reason to believe that he can't do that. But I would be surprised if, based on the signings we've made, I don't exactly know how Robinson sees them all fitting in. But for example, if he expects us to be going with Gale, McHugh, and say Andy Rose or something along those lines as the midfield three, then you've got to expect that Lasley's not perhaps in the thinking at this stage. But there's every reason to think that he could go in and still do a job. I don't think there's any. I know that the in thing seems to be to kind of dismiss him because of his age, but you know, what age does Ryan Giggs keep playing to? I mean, it's a bit of a pointless argument.
The kind of other thing I quite often see is, don't give jobs to the boys, but Stevie Craigan would be an ideal candidate. Craigan's obviously done some great work with the under-20s, but that has been with the assistance of Keith Lasley.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Stephen Craigan, to me, doesn't strike me as someone that actually wants to work. I don't know if his role at Motherwell is a full time role or.
Aye, Craigan wants to be in the media first and foremost. Everything beyond that is probably just partly the enjoyment of still being involved in football in that role. I don't think there's any interest in Craigan not being in the media.
I would assume we're guessing here, but I think, to be fair, is if he's going well and he's doing well and he's learning his role, you know, I don't know if he's doing any sort of qualifications or if he's got any qualifications or anything like that. So I don't know if he's doing anything like that, but if he's doing his telly things. And he's doing his, as you say, maybe part-time football, whatever he's doing. You know, he could be that he's just biding his time, making sure he's got it right before he actually makes a full-time step up, if you want. But I've seen a great post again on Steelman Online about
today's podcast.
About I kind of mean the boys' username, sorry, but it was a great post about how basically the jobs for the boys thing's a lot of pish. And it was a brilliant post. And I feel like we do that. And there was also the point where Pye and Bovril as well, where a boy, Albie, had posted up saying somebody had said something along the lines that we just says, we're giving it to this guy, we're giving it to that guy, why don't we appoint somebody else until he's pushing, then we get somebody else to fill in, and again it's back to the jobs for the boys, whatever. You know, as I say, it's a lot of shite, but
the thing is, the jobs for the boys thing, you know, not necessarily the jobs for the boys, but it extends to the whole idea of you know, this idea of signing players that used to play for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same sort of selective perception on it. You know, you can go on and you can read page after page of, oh, it doesn't work. You know, we sign Clarkson, we bring Clarkson back, we bring XY back, and we bring all these guys back and it doesn't work. And then, you know, you'll go to the next head and people will be saying, oh, Chris Humphrey's available. He's just been released by Hibs, let's get him. And you're like, well, make your mind up. I mean, you can't work both ways. I think if the player is the best player at the time, and often the kind of jobs for the boys thing can work because you can maybe get away with selling the club a wee bit easier to somebody who's already been there. You might not even have to offer them quite as much or quite as big a wage as some other club because they feel settled and they know what they're coming to and things like that. There's so many different attributes to it that it's not simply jobs for the boys. I don't think it's necessarily even a thing. I think it's just a kind of a lazy kind of accusation to band about.
I think it is. Aye.
I think it's quite an interesting one as well that now that Robinson's in, I don't think the kind of sentimental approach is going to come into play anyway. So if there's a player that becomes available that played with us previously, he'll be signed in merit rather than anything else. And I think that's always been the case.
Okay, Pearson's a good example of that. I think Pearson, maybe not the most loved football player ever at Motherwell because of his previous spell and stuff, but came back, was phenomenal when we stayed up under Barraclough, was allowed to leave for India. I think everybody expected him to come back. And I'm sure Pearson, if you know, he's probably at the stage of the career where if Motherwell had said, if you want to stay another year or two, he probably would have taken it. And yet he was garbage last season, and Robinson obviously doesn't care the fact that he was a Motherwell player or considered this kind of, not a legend, but same with McFadden, you know, there's Faddy as assistant manager. Released, so it's quite obvious the sentimental part of it doesn't come in it for Robinson, and I think that's a fantastic attribute to have if you're going to be a manager.
Yeah, I think another kind of element of it though is the for all like, it didn't work out with Clarkey through injuries and not being picked when he was fit. To be fair,
who's it not worked out with?
He was also considered as a big asset off the field though.
Yeah.
Whereas he was really good with the young boys, the kind of atmosphere at the club was still good when the chips were down that season as well, and we managed to battle our way out. So as long as it's not a great cost, sometimes it's actually handy having a David Clapton there or someone behind the scenes that's actually just as good for morale as much as anything else.
Well, it just says that didn't work with Clarkson the second time, didn't work with Pearson the third time. But other than that, you know, the whole...
I suppose it depends even what you consider. I mean, would bringing Ojama back count as jobs for the boys, because he'd been here one spell and then he came back a second spell and wasn't he particularly good? I mean, you know, you need to define what actually constitutes the whole jobs for the boys thing in the first place. And I mean, again, going back, you get folk, I've read folk talking about maybe we should be in for Paul Quinn.
Yeah.
You know, as cover and experience at the back, and you're going, well, that's jobs for the boys. So it's, you know, it's quite kind of convenient to kind of slate the boys. It's natural. I think we would all do it. I mean, you slate the boys for the jobs for the boys thing when it doesn't work, and when it does work, you conveniently forget it. And that's not really a slate on anybody, because we'll be just as guilty for it as anybody else. I mean,
if Jamie Murphy suddenly gets released and decides he's very homesick, I don't think there'll be anybody complaining if he says, "I'll take £200 a week off my dough."
You mentioned earlier on the podcast, Buster, there's a lot of things been going on off the field. Some of them are a bit more interesting than others. I suppose the work to the stand roof is a welcome addition, but not really something that we're going to spend a couple of minutes talking about, it must be said.
I had a speech there.
Securing a new shirt sponsor as well, McEwen Fraser Legal. They seem very enthusiastic about their gig at Motherwell and have been doing various things to promote themselves.
Yeah.
Brought out two new strips that seem to get the nod of approval from the majority of the support.
Yeah.
Try to think of other things. Season tickets seem
pitch,
to be.
The pitch is obviously undergoing quite a big rejuvenation. I don't think it's been relayed. I was reading about it's not relayed, it's more reseeded, I think.
I think it's one for the gardeners, but it's been sort of.
And the new warm up kind of bits behind the goals and stuff.
Do we not have a wee ding dong with St Johnston as well or something? Because we claim to be first, but they claim to already have one or something.
Season tickets, another thing that. I think last time I saw it advertised up 18% and this time last year, so hopefully it's all positive sound bites, and for all people can be a wee bit dismissive of figures. I don't think I've ever supported Motherwell and they've not announced increased season tickets and increased interest, but at the same time, if hopefully we come to the first game of next season and we see 10,000 crowds. I think being up 18% might be a wee bit ambitious, but a few extra bodies through the gate definitely wouldn't be a bad thing, given so often we saw last season that the figures did seem to be dwindling somewhat. The fixtures announced this coming Friday, is there any preferences or for how we're going to start the season?
Nah, because by the time the league kicks in, you're technically already started the season now with the whole League Cup thing anyway. It's not really something I'd be particularly bothered about. I couldn't really care less, to be honest.
I have foolishly decided I was going away on the 5th of August, so I'll be away that weekend. So if it's an away game to Parkhead, for example, I think you shouted about that the other day.
I just get this feeling that we're going to start.
I would like that, because I don't mind missing Parkhead.
Aye. I mean, it's positive. That's the thing. I think it's quite interesting when you're saying there about quite a lot of the positive things going both. I mean, we've already spoken about the signings being quite positive, and then the stuff off the park is all quite positive. And I think there does seem to be, by and large, quite a positive feeling, which is quite interesting considering we're still only a few weeks after having an absolute
season,
disaster of a season and only managing to stay up with a couple of weeks left. I think that's a good thing, and I think everybody's got a right to be positive, because I think it is, you know, it's quite a historic season as well, the first ever that's fan owned and all that kind of thing, everything seems to be kind of working into place. Obviously still need some more signings, still need some more defenders, still need it to work on the park, but I think at least it looks as though we're going to be getting into the season with a lot of things to be positive about, and if it does come together, then we might be in for a half decent season.
We mentioned there the positives off the field, and I suppose that does open the door for the Welsh Society as well to try and cash in on some of that positivity. You're kind of halfway through the double your money, Les Hutchinson thing. It is really the time to try and kick on and carry that momentum.
I think everybody rightfully looks at it and says, well, we're almost halfway through this year of the double your money, where's the efforts to kind of encourage that? The problem is, and it's something I obviously didn't realise until I joined the board at the start of the year, there's so many things that still needed to be improved to allow you to do that, the communication, things like that. But even for example, the database that had been used for many years, just wasn't really up to scratch, and that had to be completely revamped. Tom Feely in particular has put a hell of a lot of work into it. So now the database is all up to date. Everybody is now, you know, completely, all details are there, easily accessible, and it sounds such a simple thing to have, but it's obviously something that was never really put in place when the Welsh Society was first formed. So just something like that now gives you the opportunity to contact, you know, you can look at, right, who paid in the first year and hasn't paid since, or who is maybe paying a fiver a month, and we can maybe see if they fancy increasing a wee bit. We're now in a position to do that, and there's going to be letters going out to pretty much Welsh Society members, whether they've lapsed or not, over the next wee while, what's the events and things like that going to be announced as well. The new benefit structure is going to be released, I think, next week. That's going to be reviewed every year now, so that throughout a season people can hate it, or they can like it, and they can comment, and it'll get changed in the summer. But the whole double your money thing is massive, it's huge. But the only reason it's not been hammered until now is because you need to have the lines of communication and all that first. So now that you've got the weekly newsletters, and you've got, I think, more engagement and better communication that can still be vastly improved, then I think you're in a position to kind of crack on and say to folk. But you're right, capitalising on the positivity is massive, because I think it shows that the claim that it's unsustainable doesn't really hold any water. No. You could possibly have still claimed that even after fan ownership, after the Welsh Society took over around, what was it, November last year, October, November last year. You could maybe say, oh, it's not going to work up until now, but you're going into the first season. This is fan ownership. The budgets that have been drawn up for next season are based on fan ownership. Nobody's getting into, you know, plunging the club into debt to do up the East Stand, or reseed the pitch, or bring in these new warm-up areas, or sign, you know, some of the players we've got. It's all been done in fan ownership. It's all been done under fan ownership. And I think it's shown that, aye, it can work. Obviously, it still needs Motherwell fans to back it. But now that the Welsh Society is investing in the club to the sum of six digits every season, and will continue to do so, the more folk that invest, essentially, the better signage you're going to be able to make. Now, that's not correlating a direct line. You know, you're not paying into a plane budget, but you're basically paying into a club that then divvies up its finances how it wants to do it. And if it has money, and if it can afford to do up the stadium like it's doing, or it can afford to reseed the pitch, or, you know, sign a player that we wouldn't normally do, then you can draw a line back to the money the fans are putting in, not just through fan ownership, but season tickets, merchandise, all that kind of thing. It all comes together. It's still difficult. You know, something could still go wrong. You could, TV deal could collapse, but that would happen. It wouldn't matter who your owner is if that happened. I mean, so I think it is a positive thing, and it's just about getting that message out there, because I think if people realised how much it hopefully will work towards engaging you and making you feel as though you're part of it, I think that's going to improve massively from next season onwards. But people realised as well the fact that every penny you pay in is benefiting the club. You know, we're also in a situation, we've not mentioned it yet, we're meant to be offering Louis Moult a new deal. So we're going into this season having finished ninth last season, had a terrible, terrible year, probably could, possibly should have been relegated, given we were getting a horse, you know, six goals, five goals in games, some of the worst football I've ever seen. And yet we're going into this season, stadium upgrades, the best playing surface in Scotland bar none, offering our star striker a new deal, you know, landing coups from down south. I mean, this is fan ownership. This is what you're seeing. So I don't see, you know, why we shouldn't. Folk can still raise concerns and question it. That's it. Like Hayland ones. But folk can still raise concerns, and they can still question, of course, because people need to keep doing that, because if you don't, that's when people get lazy and people take their eye off the ball. But, you know, the whole idea of just simply dismissing it because it's easy to say, oh, it's unsustainable, just doesn't work. A lot of Motherwell fans think that the Welsh Society is unsustainable because we don't have as many fans as Hearts. There'll be Hearts fans who don't think fan ownership there is unsustainable because they don't have as many fans as Barcelona. Yeah. That's how it works. You know, there's fan-owned clubs in the World Leagues of Scotland. There'll be fan-owned clubs not even playing professional football. Like, it's sustainable. Any football club can be sustainable with fan ownership. It just needs the fans to back it to make it properly succeed.
I think it's just to say as well, I was actually going to mention that 2 years later, about obviously, well, you specifically, Jay, about, you know, what's happening with us because it's halfway through a year, whatever. It was based on a post that our pal Stephen Cameron made on Steel Man Online as well. He basically said that along similar lines, you know, it's halfway through the year, there's not been much activity so far. And we've spoken about it as well. I think it's whether it's with yourself or yourself and another, I think it's maybe something we should get together and speak about again, the Welsh society in general. But as you say, I don't think any of us don't think it's sustainable. I know we've seen all the posts, whatever, online as well, but you know, basically from what you've said there about how there's so much red tape, if you want, that you have to go through before we even have to start putting on these events, fair enough. That goes a wee bit.
It's like anything. If you want to tell folk about you want to properly tell folk about the double your money thing and not look pure half-arsed, then you need to have the ability to do that. And if you've got now newsletters going out every week and you've got summaries of the meetings every month and you're hopefully constructing a website that folk are going to visit more regularly and you're you know, having more events and you're making people feel a part of it, and as I said, you've then brought in a database that allows you to write to folk directly, then it gives you a platform to have a not proper orchestrated recruitment drive, if you like. There's no point in kind of, you know, 1 month going, alright, what we'll do is we'll put our thing on Facebook, and then the next month, alright, we'll share this on Twitter. You need to have a proper sit down strategy, a proper recruitment campaign, a drive. Right, we'll write to this group, and then we'll write to this group, and then we'll write to this group, and that's now what's about to happen. But until you get to the point where you've got the resources to do that and the ability to do that, then there's no point. You can't win. You either don't do it a lot, or you try and do a lot and make yourself look completely inept because you've not got the ability to do it properly. And I think they've chosen the first option till now, and the plan is now to properly try and champion that. And yes, we're halfway through, but we've still got, you know, a lot of time left. And there's even folk who have offered, there's folk in the Welsh society who have offered, for example, they maybe renew every year for £50, and there's one or two folk I know who have suggested that they'll pay £150 this year and then not pay an annual fee for the next 3 years. So they're still paying the same, but it's getting doubled this year. Yeah. It's just wee things like that. If you can try and encourage people to do that, not necessarily put more money in, but just be a wee bit more creative with it. And then because the Welsh Society now owns the club and is paying directly into the club, it means every penny that's doubled this year, it's the club that benefits. It's you know, keeping Louis Moult or signing Gail Biggie and all that kind of thing. That's what it is. You can now draw the line from fan ownership to what goes on the park, and that's what people want. People want to see top six, a team challenging for the top six, and you're not going to get that unless folk kind of back fan ownership now, because unfortunately, or fortunately, depending how you look at it, that is now the only route. There is no millionaire. Is that the hacker going on in the background? There's now no billionaire, you know, sitting ready to splash the cash on Motherwell.
I think they're actually doing the hacker next door.
Fan ownership is now the only show in town, so it's either a case of, you know, be a part of it and try and make it work to the, because it will. If folk put the money in, it will succeed. I don't have any doubt about that whatsoever. The level of how it succeeds is just like anything else. It depends on how much money goes in. It depends on how competent the people in charge of it are. That's, you could say that about a single businessman, you could say that about the manager, you could say that about anything. So if fans can get behind it, and hopefully they will, we have a wee bit more sort of a recruitment drive, making things a wee bit more engaging, and as you said, capitalising on what seems to be a positive pre-season that I think a couple of weeks ago nobody would have really expected.
I think an interesting part of it as well is the McEwen Fraser Legal getting involved. The last couple of seasons we've been quite late in the game announcing a shirt sponsor. I think Motorpoint was actually beyond the point where we had released the strips last season, so yeah. The strips were brought out without.
It's not even just the strips, I think that kind of raises, people get concerned about that, you know, people go, we can't even get a sponsor, you know, is that how kind of poor, like, we're such a poor asset to sponsors, we can't actually get somebody in and
you sit down though with the club when you're negotiating these deals, and full credit to Suzanne Reid and her team there for getting the sponsor in, but they'll look at the club as a whole and they won't see instability or anything else, because quite frankly they just wouldn't get involved.
I can say categorically, like, regardless of what you're thinking about the fan ownership and all that, there is no, I mean, it's stable, it's absolutely stable. You mentioned Suzanne Reid, they've obviously improved the commercial department in terms of the staff they've brought in. Now that's not extra staff. I've seen folk on Steelman Online suggest that, well, why are we putting so much money in bringing in this extra staff? It's not extra staff, it's staff that have replaced those who were there before, and that's came at a bigger cost to the club because they're paying more wages. But the projection based on last season, the amount of money they brought in from it and what they expect to make this season is totally worth it. And I think it's genuinely a very stable position to be in. We actually are in probably the most, ironically for folk who, you know, seem to think that fan ownership is the most unstable option going, we're probably the most stable financially that we've been for many, many years, because you now know what's happening. You've got continual investment. You've not got a businessman who's going to suddenly pull the plug or decide he's not going to invest anymore. You look at our previous years, why have we been, like, were we particularly stable before fan ownership? When you had John Boyle driving us into debt to try and achieve third, when you had him then proceeding to spend year after year trying to sell the club, you then had the years of uncertainty with the whole fan ownership, will it happen, will it not? It's the most stable the club's probably been financially for years. You know, so it's almost completely opposite to what people try and say about it being unsustainable and that kind of thing. It's probably the most stable we've been for many, many years.
Absolutely. And another thank you to McEwen Fraser Legal, who donated a home shirt for the Disabled Supporters Association fundraising. That was a top gesture and something that we all really appreciate. Thank you to everyone that put their hand in their pocket and donated. Over £600 raised through the fundraising, actually over £700 now that we had a bottle donated back to us and sold for £80 last night. So yeah, great stuff, and hopefully that kind of offsets some of the bad news and the difficult times that the Disabled Supporters Association had at the tail end of last season. So we wish them all the best for 2017-18 and beyond, obviously. Guys, I think that'll pretty much do us for...
Did we name on the signings? Who else was there? There was Tanner Rose,
Fisher, Big G,
and Trevor.
Trevor, yeah.
And that's the five, isn't it? That's, and then obviously the two younger boys that we seem to have possibly signed for the under-20s. Well, one we have and one we may do for the under-20s.
And again, you've heard us all struggle with the names that this
well, week. Well, one in particular. I mean, I think the rest. Alex Fisher is pretty straightforward.
I forgot him. You forgot Trevor Carson. It's because we're all now sitting in our own houses behind our laptops. And again, just a wee shout out, because when I was talking to Sammy, he says, we're sitting in Club 100, basically just recording this, and he says, give us a shout out, let people know we're open. Obviously, when we come here on a Saturday, it's Phil and Moreau fans, so if you're out for a pint, come along to Club 100.
And they're also going to be running a bus to Gateshead away and every away game next season, I think.
Plus they're taking under all the George Bowie there.
This podcast is sponsored by both Steelman Online and Club 100.
I would actually like to give a few shout outs as well, but I'm going to do that. Well, we'll wrap things up for today. Are you going to say cheerio again? Penny is not going to say cheerio. Well, okay, right. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time to look forward in more detail to the 2017-18 season. We didn't actually mention the Betfred Cup either, but we'll not go back to do that. We'll talk about that just before the first game, which is
July 15th
against Greenock Morton. So we'll be back before then.
The first one's is it? No, the first one's against
Queen's Park.
We've got away to Queen's Park, and then the away to Edinburgh City, I think on the Tuesday or something after that, and then two home games with Morton and
the one that we wanted to go away.
The one that practically every Motherwell fan wanted an away day to Berwick is going to be a lovely home game for us.
Yeah. Right, Penny, are you going to close us up by saying cheerio?
I take that as a no.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back in about a fortnight's time. Until then, thank you and goodbye.